Aloha, Kalko. This is Kalkini Norm. I'm here at the radio station KAPULP 104.7 FM, and we're interrupting our normal programming because I want to have a telephone interview with the legendary Otto-san. And I'm going to place a phone call right now and see if I can get him on the phone.
Hi.
Good morning, Mr. Ota. How are you?
Okay, fine.
Aloha.
Aloha.
How are you doing this morning?
Oh, I'm fine.
That's good. That's good. Well, we're very excited here in the Monterey Bay area of California because of your upcoming visit to San Jose the end of this month.
Well, I think I'm more excited because I haven't been traveling, you know. It's a lifestyle that changed from young to old age.
When was the last time you were here in the California?
No, I was there for the, they had the Santa Cruz Ukulele Festival. They had a club there.
Yeah, we still have that same club, the Ukulele right. Club of Santa Cruz.
There.
Yeah, oh, that's wonderful.
With my son and Daniel Hall.
Uh-huh. Well, for those of you that need some introduction here, I am speaking with the legendary Herb Ota, Ota-san, and you know, you really are a legend. I mean, you have probably over 60 albums and CDs to your credit. One website I went to said that you had 100 albums and CDs. So I don't know what's the correct number. Is it 60
I have no
or
idea. I don't who know who takes care of the discography, but
somewhere in between, huh?
Well, I have no idea because they're talking about recordings, you know, internationally.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, that they're including all the work that you did over in Japan.
I still record for JVC, which is in Japan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, one thing I do know that you are a multiple Nahoku Hano Hano Award winner. And as a matter of fact, you won the very first instrumental, best instrumental song in 1978 when the Nohokus first came out for A Ku'u Morning Dew.
That's Eddie Kamai's company.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about Eddie Kamai. I know you credit Eddie Kamai as being your mentor, your teacher, so to speak.
Yes, well, he's a friend and a teacher. And I met him when I was like 12 years old, 12 or 13. And he had just started a group, just a duo called the Ukulele Rascals. He and a guy, Shoei Kimi, and they used to perform all of the islands, you know. They're the only ones that played non-Hawaiian music. They played tangos, jazz, country, everything you could think of. But the category of music is not like today. Today is you have a multiple choice of music. You know, like from New Age to rock and hard rock and things like that. They didn't have rock and roll there. And he took me under his wing, and I think I'm the only one that he used to play for one-on-one and advise. He gave me a lot of advice.
Yeah, well, you know, Eddie Kamai certainly is a great man. I met him. He was here in Santa Cruz a couple of years ago, and I had the pleasure of speaking with him, and I could see where Eddie would do something like that. He's a very giving individual.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And then you had an association. I think one of the, maybe, I'm not so sure about this, but maybe one of the turning points in your life was your association with Andre Pop.
Well, that was later, probably in the mid-70s, you know. I went over to Paris to record an album with him. And he was the one that invited me over. to do that, and that was Song for Anna.
And that was a huge, huge hit for you, wasn't it?
Was an international hit, and it's a very interesting story about, you know, he was entered as a for original composition for the Yamaha International Song Fest, and he won with his composition, and that's where I met him. And I played for him, like Play the Loon and some other things, you know, a lot of classical things. And he told me, why don't you come to Paris in April and we'll make an album. And that's how it started.
Yeah, and that album truly was very, very successful. I've heard figures
that...
Yeah,
it was on A&M, yeah.
Yeah, and it was a number one album in Japan. It was a number one album in Brazil. Number one here in San Francisco.
Seattle,
I think Dallas.
Texas.
Dallas, even in Dallas.
Radio station.
Yeah.
Yeah, funny, it was played on a rock station, pop stations, and it sounded very classical.
Yeah, well, there are some very beautiful songs on that album. I have that album, as a matter of fact. I collect vintage Hawaiian albums. And that was one of the albums that I collected a few months ago, and I've listened to it many times, and it really is beautiful. It's that the songs are timeless, that's one of the things about ukulele music that kind of strikes me. It's a very simple instrument. It's like watercolors. Watercolors are very simple paints. But you give watercolors to an artist like Andrew Wyeth or Winslow Homer, and you can make masterpieces out of watercolors.
Mm-hmm.
And the ukulele is the same way. It's a very simple instrument, but with the person of your ability and your feeling, it becomes a magical instrument.
Yeah, well, you know, the ukulele physically looks like a simple instrument. But it's difficult to play well.
Well, you know, there are a few. I don't know if you spend very much time on the computer, but there are a few videos on a website called YouTube that have you featured playing a number of songs. And one of the videos is with you and your son Herb Oda Jr. playing Hi'ilawe. And at one point in the song where you're doing your finger roll, you can actually almost visualize the water falling over over the waterfalls, the way you make the music sound. It really is remarkable.
I think that's a ukulele extremist point of view.
No, I think you did it. I think you did it on purpose. I'm sure you did. Because
that was on his release, I think, right? Of the new album or something.
Yeah, it may be, but I saw it. It was a video performance with the two of you sitting on stage.
It was the release party.
Oh, is that where it was? Yeah. Oh, I see. Okay.
At the Alamona Hotel.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about your visit here to San Jose. You're going to be spending at least 2 days in the area. You're going to be doing a workshop where you're going to be giving lessons. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh. This is the first time for me. I've never done that on the mainland. The only workshop I did was in 2002 at the Lionel Hampton Music Jazz Festival that I performed in. And this time, I don't know what is expected of me, but I think they'll brief me when I get there.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that you'll no matter what they confront you with, I'm sure you'll be able to come through.
You think so?
and then the following night, you're going to be giving a performance at June 27th.
At Santa Clara.
Yeah, at the Santa Clara University Recital Hall, and you're going to be there are going to be a couple other people with you.
Yeah, well, we play a duo as we have recorded too, but not available. you know, in the United States. But he, Nando Swan, who plays with me on the guitar, doesn't use a pick also. And he is probably the only protege student of Wes Montgomery. And he's from Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. And he's going to be coming over with you.
Yeah, right, because we play a lot together for the ukulele festival. We have gone abroad and performed too. And we're both very young people.
Well, no. young at heart.
Young at heart, yeah. But he's a great guitarist, accompanist, and he's a great soloist.
Has he recorded with you internationally?
We have, yes.
Uh-huh.
But not for U.S. release.
Uh-huh. Well, every now and then I come across some CDs for sale in various places, and so I'll keep an eye out for...
Yeah, we did two for JVC. One is coming out on the 18th of this month, but it's not going to be released in the U.S.
Uh-huh. Well, with the internet these days, people can shop.
Right, iTunes.
Yeah, and anywhere. I've purchased CDs from Australia and in England and even Japan. I think I've purchased some CDs from.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible that that we here in America can find those CDs. And one other person is going to be accompanying you to San Jose, your son Herb Oda Jr.
Yes, I think he's going to do solo work because he's very, it's not mainstream kind of music, but he's very directed to Hawaiian music. I think you're familiar with his playing.
Oh, definitely. Herb is your son is one of my favorite musicians and one of my favorite people. I've met him a number of times, and we've kind of formed a bit of a friendship. And you know, I've told him in the past that when he plays, the music is very, very visual. I can picture things in my mind when I hear music from. When your son plays, and the same goes for you too.
I taught him at the age of three, and the rest he did it on his own, and he adapted. That's what I really wanted. I didn't want a copy of myself playing, you know, my style. He developed his own style of playing.
Well, he certainly did.
Yes,
you're very right in that. I mean, you're
I'm very proud of him.
Yeah, your styles are very, very. Your styles are very, very different, as you say. But each one is beautiful in its own respect. Well, you started. Speaking of your son starting early, you started pretty early too, didn't you?
Well, I started at the age of seven. My mom was. Used to play. There used to be a ukulele in every house in Hawaii, right?
Yeah.
And those days, the ukulele cost $5. That was a kamaka ukulele.
Oh, really? A kamaka cost $5,
yeah.
Huh? And that same ukulele today would be worth what?
More like $500. Right?
Yeah. That's amazing.
Well, anyway, she used to sing Hawaiian songs and strum the ukulele, so... I picked it up from there, but I never took it seriously until I really met Eddie Kamai, you know. And because I used to play I used to take accordion lessons in like 10 years old, 11 years old. And then it just got heavy, too heavy for me, catching the bus with the accordion.
Yeah.
So I quit. My parents were upset because they saved the money to buy me one, you know. But at the same time, you know, I just picked up the ukulele. And I didn't know you could read music with it like any other instrument. You know, everybody said it was a novelty instrument. So I didn't know. Maybe it was a toy, you know. But when I realized that you could play any music with the instrument, although the range is limited, it's the range is similar to a C flute, you know.
Uh-huh.
And that's when I got really serious.
Well,
I used to practice about 6 hours a day, you know.
Well, you just hit on something that I've read through my research, that you were one of the innovators of ukulele by doing something with your G string, lowering your G string, which enabled you to
A low G, in other words.
Yeah, yeah.
G below middle C.
Yeah.
Because up to that time, just My Dog Has Fleas was, you know, C was the lowest note you could play, middle C.
Uh-huh.
But with the G below middle C, so you could play all the notes below that.
Which opened up a whole different realm of music. You could play classical,
yeah,
you could play jazz.
One of the reasons why is because of you know, the modern industrial area, the mechanical area. People started making nylon strings for ukulele. A long time ago, they were gut strings. You know, and you couldn't tune, could get a string to be tuned to a low G,
mm-hmm,
until they finally developed the modern G string.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, how many ukuleles do you have? I'm just curious.
Not much. My son has more than I do.
Well, I mean,
I only have about four that I use.
Well,
you know, I use the last recording I did, I used Kamaka ukulele, six-string concert,
mm-hmm,
which probably was the only one that made for me by Sam Kamaka.
Have you been playing the same instrument for many, many, many years? The same one?
Well, I have the instrument, but I only use it like for recordings and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
I used that when it was made for me in 1975 by Sam Kamaka, and I recorded the album Feeling for A&M with that instrument. And I, of course, I play Martin standards. I have two of those. I also have a tenor, and tenor instrument is the one four-string instrument that I recorded Song for Anna with in Paris.
I see. Mm-hmm. Well, in addition to being a Nahoku Hanohano Award winner, a multiple award winner, you were also awarded a Lifetime Achievement Award.
Yeah,
by
that's strange, you know. I'm an instrumentalist, yeah. If I was a singer or something like that, I would think that I will accept that, but, you know, as far as being an instrumental player, it's like just being a musician, you know.
Well, I think it's a little bit more than that. I really do. I think you're being very, very modest.
I said that, so why would I get a Lifetime Achievement Award? Maybe for the number of albums I recorded, you know.
Yeah, but no, I think instrumental music is a big, big part of all music, but also Hawaiian music. You have done a number of Hawaiian LPs and CDs.
I would say I did at least 20 Hawaiian albums.
Yeah.
But that was kind of a long time ago.
Yeah, and getting back to this, you know, starting out at age 7, you say you didn't really get serious until you met Eddie Kamai, but you must have been pretty good because at age 9, you were winning amateur hour contests at the radio station in Honolulu.
Yeah, that was age 10.
Yeah.
Age 10, well, you know, I won the first prize, and they gave me a Listerine toothpaste and toothbrush and a hairbrush. and $10.
Well, the $10 is okay, but I don't know about the list.
That was a lot of money at that time. I used to count the number of movies I could go to because they were 9 cents a movie.
Well, and one other thing that I noticed, that you actually had an appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show back in 1955. What was that experience like?
That was in the Marine Corps.
But you were playing...
I was playing for the All-Navy Show.
Ah, I see. So you were part of a group.
No, it's not a group, but we all had to audition, you know, for that in Mission Ballroom, San Diego, and then went to the East Coast.
I see. But you were actually on the show, though, weren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Were you as a solo entertainer, or were you...
Yeah, I played solo. Just, and they had a lot of other people. They're all old or gone already.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But you've been on the Dinah Shore Show.
No, I haven't been on the Dinah Shore.
Oh, I thought so. I thought I read that in one of the websites.
No.
Oh, well, you never know what you read, you know. That's why it's always good to talk to the source.
When Tom Perana hit, I was on the Hit Parade Show, which is a summer replacement for the Sonny and Cher Show.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah. I did that. In Los Angeles at CBS. That's when Olivia Newton-John had her hit.
Mm-hmm.
I think I honestly thought it was something about her first record. I don't know. But they had Hughes Corporation doing Rock the Boat.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I was on that thing for Song for Anna.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to keep you too long. It certainly has been a total delight talking to you, and we really look forward to seeing you here in the San Jose area, June 26th and 27th.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yep, and have a nice day.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye. Well, that was very special for me to be able to talk to the legendary Otis-san, Herb Otis Sr. And once again, he is going to be here in the San Jose area. He's going to be giving an ukulele workshop June 26th at the UI Chi Senior Center. The workshop is going to be from 7:30 to 8:30 p.m. $40 per person. If you're interested in going to that workshop, you can go to the website hawaiimusiclive.com. And then the next evening he is going to be at the Santa Clara University Recital Hall. And that concert is going to be at 8 p.m. Friday, June 27th. And tickets are $35 a piece for that concert. Here's your chance to see, you know, one of the legends of not only Hawaiian music, but just one of the legends of music to begin with. Somebody who, even though he doesn't know exactly how many CDs or albums he's done, it's well over 60. And a legendary master of the ukulele. So it was my pleasure to speak with Otis-san, and now we'll go back to our regular programming.
And the beauty of this land, so I say, doesn't matter.